Well, thank you, Pastor Rick, for having us. And it's great to be here. I don't think I've ever taken this exit off 94 before. I've been past here many, many times because I went to school at North Central and I grew up in Racine, Wisconsin, down in the southeastern corner of the state. So I've gone up and down I-94 all my life. But it's great to be here. I actually have really loved this western part of the state of Wisconsin. We've been in a number of churches over here and we've really enjoyed it. It's actually really beautiful here. I love all the hills, and it's amazing. I should have spent more time here as a kid. Of course, I didn't get to pick where we went. Then vacation was always up north. And really, up north for Racine, people in Racine is just above Milwaukee and Madison. Everything else is up north. When we lived in Gresham, I pastored Morgan Assembly of God over by Gresham, which is near the Mohican and Menominee Reservation. To them, everything up north is north of 29. That's where you have up north. But I grew up in Racine, Wisconsin. My wife Pam is here with me. She grew up in Michigan, so don't hold that against her, because the people in Michigan don't hold it against me that I'm from Wisconsin. Both of our children were born in Racine. We have two daughters, Samantha, who turned 17 yesterday, and Bethany, who's 14. They are in Waupaca at their church right now, their youth group. We want them to stay plugged in with the church there, so that's where they are tonight. But while you pastored Morgan Assembly of God, I was in our church, and there we had two sections of pews on a center aisle. And I was at the church on a Monday night, and I was walking up and down our center aisle, and I was right about here in front of our communion table, and I felt the Lord speak to me, and what he said was, I want you to go into overseas missions. At the time, our church was a Native American church. We mostly had Menominee and Mohican people. Yes, there are plenty of Mohicans left. Don't listen to James Fenimore Cooper. And so we were part of home missions, but God was saying, I want you to go into overseas foreign missions. And I had studied German in middle school and high school. And I said, okay, Lord, I've studied German. You're sending us to Germany. And God said, no, I'm not sending you to Germany. And what I did next is what you're not supposed to do. So learn this from me. Don't do what I did next. I started making suggestions. When God is speaking to you, ask questions. He has all the answers. No, I started making suggestions. I said, okay, not Germany. How about Austria or Switzerland or Liechtenstein or Luxembourg? All the German-speaking countries I could think of. And God said no to each of them. So then I asked, okay, Lord, where do you want me to go? And as clearly as I'm talking to you, the Lord spoke to my spirit and said, Poland. And I really wish this next part was a joke. But I said to the Lord, they don't speak German in Poland. Like he didn't know. No, all those people in Poland are praying to me in German. You just don't know it. Yeah. Oh, okay. So I went home and I told my wife, I said, I think God is calling us to Poland. And I didn't know what reaction to expect from her because our children were quite a bit younger than they are now. I didn't know what she would do. And she got on the computer and started looking up how do we move to Poland and homeschooling in Poland because we've always homeschooled our children. And I thought, well, I guess that's one confirmation because my wife did not say, what, are you crazy? Then I went down to my office. My office was in the basement of the parsonage. And I got on my computer and I typed the following words into Google. German-speaking people in Poland. And I found 800,000 of them. It's a minority group called the Silesian people. They were left behind after World War II. At the beginning of World War II, the section of Poland that is now called Silesia was part of Germany. In fact, it had been part of Germany for about 400 years. So Silesia was not Polish before the war. Towards the end of the war, when the Soviets were pushing the Germans west, they forced the German people out of the major cities and forced Polish people to live there. The Polish people didn't get to choose to move there. They were forcibly resettled so that at the end of the war, when they sat down and redrew the lines of Europe, Stalin said to Churchill and Eisenhower, look, there are all these Polish people living here. That should be part of Poland. It was a pure land grab by the Soviets. And so this land was taken from Germany and added on to Poland. Well, anyone who knows anything about Soviet rule knows that they're no fan of religion or the church. They allowed the Polish people to keep Catholic churches open, but everything else was forced to either close or go underground. The Polish Assemblies of God existed at that time. They were forced underground, and they continued to survive throughout the Soviet occupation. But most of the other non-Catholic churches just dried up and disappeared. Fast forward to 1989, when the Polish government became free and took over, really around 1991 is when the government got fully established, one of their earliest acts was to say to the German Catholic churches that were serving these Silesian people, they said to them, you can't be German anymore, you have to be Polish. You have to start speaking Polish, you have to have Polish pastors, you have to swear allegiance to the Polish church, you can't be part of the German church anymore, you have to convert everything to Polish. Now, how many of you in here know anything about German people? Yeah. How do German people react when they're told, you have to do things this way? Their reaction is, oh yeah? And what happened was, for the last 30 years, these people have, for the most part, not gone to any church of any kind because no one else has gone to these people. We went over and we worked with Pastor Mariusz Muszczynski, and yes, I've practiced that. He was the head of missions and church planting for the Polish Assemblies of God. He told us they had tried to plant a church among these people, but these people were completely unresponsive to an ethnically Polish pastor because of ongoing ethnic strain between the two groups. In fact, even today, the Polish government is mildly oppressing these people. Their villages are being dissolved. They're becoming, you know, you're 50 miles outside of the city of Opola, but your village is going to cease to exist and your population is now going to be part of the city. That's 50 miles of countryside away because we don't want you determining for yourself how you run things. We want the Polish population to tell you how to run things. And this is happening throughout the Silesian region. Their villages are being dissolved. The names of their streets and towns are being changed from German-sounding names to Polish names. The German history and heritage and culture of the people is being erased. Even in villages that are 90%+ Silesian, they're having their culture deleted. And so this has caused a backlash against the Polish people. So when a Polish pastor comes, they're not interested in hearing what he says. The Polish church still wants to reach them. The Polish Assemblies of God wants to reach these people. When we went over there, they told us they'd been praying that a missionary church planter would come, and we felt that God was sending us. I had the opportunity to teach English in a couple of these villages, Praszka and Ochodza, and the people in our English class were willing to talk with me about faith, about the Bible, about God. There is no such thing as separation of church and state in Poland, so I can talk about God all I want in the school. In fact, religion class is required, so it's kind of nice having that required open door. Yeah, I can talk about God. And they were very interested in what makes American Christianity different than Polish Christianity, especially when I would talk about Jesus. And this was the best thing that could happen. You see, to these Silesian people, they haven't had a church, a proper church, for 30 years. They've been handing down these religious traditions orally for 30 years, parent to child, without a church. But what's happened is that the stories of the Bible have become mythology. They've become legend. Jesus is a character in a book, a legendary figure. Some of them may still think of him as a historical figure, but to a lot of them, the things that Jesus did that they're told about, those belong in the same area as talking about the Greek gods or the Roman gods. It's myth, it's legend. They're interesting stories. But when I would talk about Jesus as a person, who you could know and have a relationship with and talk to, it sparked something inside them, something that had been buried for 30 years, something in them that told them this was the truth. And the people responded positively to, wait, I can talk to Jesus? I don't need a priest in between me and Jesus. I don't need the church in between me and God. I can approach God myself. It was something that, it just turned something in their minds. So we see an open door to reach these people, to plant a church among these people, and to reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ. As of right now, as far as the Polish Assemblies of God is aware, and as far as we're aware, there is no missionary, evangelist, or church planter of any denomination working among these people. And as Mariusz said, not even the Jehovah's Witnesses. So I always say, I need to get there before they do. Because they're in Opola, so they're in the region. We know the Jehovah's Witnesses are in the city of Opola. And they are really missionally minded. They will get there. So we are praying that we can get there first. So I ask you to please pray for us, that we will be able to finish raising our budget and get back to Poland, start preaching the gospel there. But even more importantly, pray for the Silesian people, that God will protect and preserve them, because every one of them who dies right now is dying without the hope of Jesus Christ. Pray that someone carrying the gospel gets there before me. There's 1,000 villages, we estimate. That's an estimate. There's 1,000 villages of Silesian people that have no gospel. I would love to come into some of them and find house churches. I really would. This isn't a competition. We're all in the kingdom. I would love to find Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Jesus-worshiping churches in some of these villages. It'd be like, well, God bless you guys. Let me encourage you and go to the next village that doesn't have anybody. And so please pray for them that they can receive the light of the gospel. And there was a third thing. Well, I don't know what it is anymore. At this point, I think I was going to turn it over to you to take the offering, and then I was going to take some questions. Is that correct? Yes. Oh, yeah. Please consider supporting us financially in the offering. That's good. I forgot the part. Even the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has a website called newadvent.org, and they consider this a people group that is now unreached. So they're unreached, even though they claim to be Catholic, they're considered unreached by the Catholics. So after the offering, we'll take some questions, and you can ask whatever you want.
That's a great opportunity to ask whatever you want. So all of your deep theological questions you've been thinking of.
Well, I reserve the right to say I don't know.
Oh, well, you. Okay. So let's pray over the offering, and then we'll pray over the missionaries before we go tonight. But we'll just ask God's blessing upon this offering. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time together tonight. We can learn about people that you love that need to hear the gospel. Thank you, Lord, that you're still sending laborers into the harvest field. And Lord, I pray that the Stocksdales would be able to get there before false doctrine would be able to take root and creep in. Lord, the gospel is such good news that needs to be shared. And I thank you again for calling people. And Lord, I ask that you would just bless this offering and the budget and raising the money that the Stocksdales could get to this mission field as soon as possible. And we thank you and praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.
That was the first question. That was a good one. Thank you. Well, I just wanted to give you a little bit of the drier stuff, the demographic stuff about Poland before we take some questions. That's usually one of the first questions. So the country of Poland is about the size of New Mexico, almost to the square mile, which is interesting. But the population is 38 million. They're 88% Catholic, which makes them the most Catholic large country in the world. They actually have a higher percentage of Catholics than Italy, which is impressive. And but one out of five Polish people is a Catholic atheist. They're a member of the Catholic Church. They've been baptized into the Catholic Church. They've been confirmed by the Catholic Church. They probably even attend the Catholic Church, but they don't believe in the existence of God, because the Catholic Church of Poland is largely a political and cultural institution. They actually run the government. The Polish Catholic Church has a political party called Law and Justice, and they are the dominant party of Poland. That's why you heard about the law. That's because, of course, it's the Catholic Church, so they passed a very, very strong restriction on abortion, pretty much banning it 100%. So there's some good that comes from that, but there's also a lot of issues, especially when it comes to accepting Christ. A lot of people join the Catholic Church because it's the political and cultural thing to do. I'm Polish, therefore I'm Catholic. They'll even attend the churches. I had a really good friend over there. He was one of these Catholic atheists, and he went through everything the Catholic Church wanted him to do, to get married and everything else, but he didn't believe it. This is what we do because we're Polish. And so it presents an interesting challenge. A lot of people who will be part of an institutional church, but they don't believe what the church teaches. They don't believe in God. And with the Silesian people, it's a little bit different because the institutional church has been taken from them. The majority of them still claim to be Catholic, even though they don't even have churches. They're not even going through confirmation. They're not going through all of these steps that they do in the Catholic Church otherwise. But they would still consider themselves to be Catholic just for political expediency, to get along in society, to get along with their government, to make things run more smoothly. So the average income in Poland is about $5,000 per year. So it's a relatively poor country still. It is a largely agrarian and heavy industry country. There's a lot of German heavy industry that's moved into, especially the region we're going to. There's a lot of manufacturing of car parts and things. And there are no pollution regulations, so the air quality gets pretty low, especially in the winter. But that's largely what's going on in Poland. The weather is just like here, except milder. It's not as cold in the winter or as warm in the summer. And they only get about that much snow. Well, this summer there's a heat wave across all of Central Europe, which is actually, it's been killing people. It's been really bad. Okay, so with that, Pam, will you come up here and join me? Because some of these questions, I'm sure you'll want to ask Pam things. As far as media and everything, Poland, it has been brought up pretty much to modern standards because of the EU. They have broadband high-speed internet. Their high-speed internet's actually better than ours. We had cable internet at over 100 megabytes per second, and it was amazing. But that's all because the EU has been dragging them up. In these more rural areas, it's a little more rustic. There's less of the cable stuff, and yeah, they'll have satellite. They have all their own TV. I mean, there's MasterChef in Polish, and there's, you know, Poland Has Talent and all those things. Yeah, but they do have religious programming as well. It's just that the problem is it's mostly Catholic. Almost everything that's broadcast in the Polish language is going to be run by the Polish Catholic Church, which is largely a political mouthpiece. And so I don't know, do you know if they're doing it in Polish? I know that there are some people who broadcast English over the whole, all of Europe gets English broadcasting from some of these, the Christian stations. I don't know about them being translated into Polish, and there's still a lot of Poles who don't speak any English.
We didn't have TV over there because we couldn't afford it.
Yeah, we didn't have television. We had the internet because that was the only way we could keep in touch with everyone over here, and it was only $15 a month, which wasn't too bad, but adding on TV cost a lot, so we didn't have television. We could watch MasterChef on the website, though. Well, that helped with our Polish. We watched MasterChef Junior because when they talked to the little kids, it was easier for us to understand than when they talked to adults.
Our Polish teacher told us to try to watch Polish TV to get more language. So.
That's a good question. I've never been asked that before. Good job. That's awesome.
Do you teach? Is that what you're...
I'll be teaching English in Proszków as a way to integrate into the society. It's the Silesian people are a very closed off people. They've sort of isolated themselves from the rest of Polish society. It's hard to break through that wall of defensiveness. But when I was teaching English, those walls came down automatically. They also love Americans, which is a huge help. I mean, a lot of times we hear about Europeans being suspicious of Americans. The Polish people and the Silesian people, they love America. They love Americans. They're very curious. They want to talk to us about all kinds of things. So that it's a great open door. And I see teaching as a way to reach the whole family. The plan is to teach in the public school. We know that these rural public schools are desperate for native speakers of English to come and teach their kids. I do have a teaching certificate for English as a second language. So we can go and get into the schools that way. And then I'm not just some foreigner who moved into your village and everyone's a little suspicious of. I'm your kid's English teacher. I'm your grandkid's English teacher, or your nephew or niece's English teacher. And that'll open the doors to reach these people with the gospel. So the plan is to teach.
How long have you been over there?
We were there for 2 years.
Okay. So have you been or have you thought what
you
get foot in there studying Bible study?
Oh, yeah.
We had a Bible
study. Yeah, we had a Bible study in our apartment while we were there, and we fully intend to start a house church at the same time as teaching. It'll be teaching is the way to get into the family's lives, and then starting the house church will be the way to bring salvation, the salvation message into their lives. And long term, we'd like to get the almost empty church building that's in Pruszków that I actually have a picture of. There's a church building that is just there. The Assemblies of God had considered, the Polish Assemblies of God had considered buying it when they were trying to plant churches, but since their church plant never took off, they never did. So long term, I'd love to stop teaching and just pastor until the church can take care of itself and then move on, and then move on, and then move on. Exactly. It's good. It's called the hub and spoke method of church planting. You plant a church, you raise it up until it's, you know what I'm talking about. You raise it up until it's self-sustaining, self-replicating. It can send out its own people. We put a pastor in charge of that. And then I go way over here and start over here with the idea that this will spread, you know, I hate to say almost like a virus. You know, it'll go from here to here to here to here to here.
Also get their own leaders to go out.
Yeah, they'll raise their own leadership. And then we'll start a Silesian district of the Assemblies of God. And as the Holy Spirit heals hearts and touches hearts, we would love to reconcile the Silesian leadership of the church that we're going to be planting with the Polish leadership of the Polish church so there could be some healing among these two people groups. I know that that's already coming one way. The Polish Assemblies of God wants to reach these people. And we believe that as the Holy Spirit breaks down those barriers and softens hearts, that that'll be reciprocal. And that we can see these two people groups working together to reach their communities. Because while most of these villages are in the 85 to 90% Silesian, that still leaves them 10 to 15% Polish. And the Polish people won't go to a Silesian church any more than the Silesian people will go to a Polish church. So we would love to eventually be able to bring both groups together. That can only be done by the power of the Holy Spirit. It's a good thing we're Pentecostals, right? When I was in Poland, my youngest students were 3 years old. So when I was there, they start them in preschool. Right now, the Polish government requires all children to learn English right now. They see that as the future. So it's great because that means that we can get in there. They've also passed a special law saying that if you're a native speaker of English and you're coming to teach English, you don't need a work permit. You can just teach, which is even greater because the bureaucracy is thick in that country. And what it does is I'll be able to teach in the public school. I may not be teaching preschoolers in Pruszków because I'll probably be, well, you could teach too. You have a certificate as well. But we'll probably be the only two native speakers, and so they'll likely want us to teach the older kids the more complicated English. But when I was teaching before, yeah, my youngest students were 3, and I went through all the ages of kids, all the way up to teenagers, all the way up to prepping them for their college entrance exam, which is way more intense than any testing I've ever seen in America. These people cram for months, and they make themselves sick and hire tutors. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's important that both of us teach, because then they have two, and then they'd feel more comfortable giving us younger and younger students. But exactly. We do believe in whole family ministry, reaching the kids and reaching the parents, reaching the grandparents, the aunts, the uncles, the cousins. Let's get them all. And so we see this as a way to really be accepted into the community. And I know that in Ochodza, the Silesian village I was teaching in, it just, being the American coming to teach English just blew open doors. People just, they were, They were floored that an American would come to their little village to teach them English.
One of the first questions we would get would be, why are you here? And we could tell them right away, because God told us to come here. And even if they think, okay, that's crazy, they still want to talk to you because you're an American, and they want to have an American friend, and they have a lot of questions. So they're willing to look past that. Oh, that sounds a little strange. Because they still have probably never met an American, and they are very curious. So they're willing to talk. They're willing to look past things like that. And and so right away, automatically, they say, why are you here? And then we were having trouble getting our residency permits when we got over there, and we thought we might get sent back to America after being there only 3 months. And Randy was telling some Polish students, he said, I might get deported back to America. And everyone was like, we'll go. Yeah, because it's kind of like exotic to them.
Yeah, it was one of the funniest concepts. When I said we might get deported back to America, the whole room erupted in laughter. They thought that was the funniest thing they'd ever heard. And I had many volunteers to pretend to be me and be deported instead. But our residency permit did eventually get approved. It was a long and arduous process that involved standing in lines for many, many, many hours. I am well acquainted with Polish bureaucracy, and the less I have to deal with it in the future, the better. Because they kept all the Soviet-style bureaucracy. I now know what Soviet-style bureaucracy is. That's where you stand in line in a hallway for an hour and a half. You get into an office to have a clerk tell you don't have the right piece of paper. And that right piece of paper is in the office right next door. Now, she has a door in between the two offices. But no, you've got to go stand in the hallway for an hour and a half to go into that room and ask for the right piece of paper. Then you go stand in the hallway for an hour and a half to go in and give her the right piece of paper to be told to come back the next day when you're told that's the wrong piece of paper.
And then it all comes down. And then it all comes down to knowing the right person. And our landlady happened to be the right person. So.
And she took care of it.
At the last minute.
Yeah, she said, tell this lady that you're my friend, and it'll all be taken. So I went with a letter that was written in Polish, and I gave it to the receptionist. The receptionist gave it to the woman in the office. The woman in the office came out and got us and took us into the hallway. She didn't speak any English, but she said, so that was sit down. So we sat down. She went down the hallway, and she disappeared into an office. Then she came out of the hallway, came back down, and she said, which means follow me. I speak that much Polish sign language. She took us into that little office that she had come out of. She said something in Polish. They took all our paperwork and stamped it, and we were approved. That's the way things work.
Yes. Is there any threat from the Catholic Church as far as competition of starting an alien religion?
There isn't, because the Polish Assemblies of God has been there actually since the early 1900s. They were the Pentecostal Church of Poland. They sort of came out of the Pentecostal movement that started in Sweden in the early 1900s, then moved south into Northern Europe. There's some discussion over whether or not they predate the actual American Assemblies of God. They might not. But they got official formal approval from the government to be a registered church. Now, once you're a registered church with the government, you're registered. That's it. They can't do anything against you. And so the important phrase to know is Kościół Zielonoświątkowy, because that means the Pentecostal Church of Poland. So who are you working with? I'm with the Kościół Zielonoświątkowy. Oh, okay. And so that opens doors. And a lot of the Polish people had heard of the Pentecostal Church of Poland, but they know absolutely nothing about it. The Assemblies of God, the Polish AG, which is who that group is, they have 24,000 members out of 38 million. It's around 0.06%. But a lot of people have heard of it, and then they have lots of questions. Well, what makes you different? What do you do? And I talk about how we have direct relationships with Jesus. Oh, wow, that sounds great. And I was like, we don't have to confess our sins to the priest. Oh, wow, that's amazing. And priests can get married. They don't have the word pastor. Well, they don't have the word pastor. The Polish word for pastor is priest, because they don't have the word pastor. In the Polish Assemblies of God, they've taken the English word pastor and added "żem" to the end to make it a Polish word, so they say pastorzem. That means pastor. But outside of the church, outside of the Pentecostal church, that's not a word. It's like, well, that's not a word. What are you saying? And so they would, it's chants. I was a priest. I was introduced as a priest. When my friends, my non-Pentecostal friends were introducing me, I was introduced as a priest. You'd be surprised at the doors that open for you when you're a priest in Poland. And they didn't even ask any questions about me being married. It's like, well, maybe American priests get married. We're not going to question it. So it was actually, it's kind of interesting.
Oh, say that. The Pentecostal church has 24,000 members, and it's the largest evangelical church in the country.
So that's what percent?
0.06.
0.06.
They're microscopic if they exist at all. The Baptists have a handful of people.
The Lutherans were all pretty much pushed out.
The Lutherans were pretty much pushed out of the country entirely and haven't tried to come back. The way that the demographics go, it's 88% Catholic, 10% agnostic / atheist, the nuns. That doesn't count the 20% of Polish Catholic atheists, so 30% of the country doesn't believe in God formally. So that gets you to 98%. The other 2% are everything else, Buddhists, Muslims, Pentecostals, Lutherans, Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons. We're all lumped in that 2%. And like Pam said, we're the largest evangelical group at 24,000 people. Most of that 2% is just this mosh of everyone else. We're the other. When they do the demographics, it's 90, it's 88%, 10% other, and we're in the other. They're working hard. Statistically, I don't know how they're doing. No one's tracked it in the recent years. I just know that you see them in every single city, standing on the side of the road with they're in the road with their stand. They're in with their pamphlet. Well, they have a stand where they're handing out magazines, they're handing out books, they're handing out pamphlets. They're in every shopping center. They are everywhere. They're in every city. They're all over the place. I mean, I've seen them standing in a busy intersection in the middle, handing out stuff to cars while they're stopped at the lights and things, trying to get people in. Now, on the bright side, that's the least effective to try to reach people in Poland, because when you try to hand someone something on the road, they think you're selling it to them. We found that out because someone handed us something on the road and we took it, and then he wanted money for it, so we gave it back. And so he handed us a tract, and he wanted money for it. We gave it back to him. No, I don't know what it was. Well, I don't need this, but it was. Was it a picture of Mary? It was a picture of somebody, and we didn't take it. But a lot of that handing stuff out, they're trying to get money. So they are kind of seen as beggars because of what they're doing. So that has stymied their efforts, that they haven't changed their methods for the culture. So that's positive from our point of view, that they haven't adjusted for the Polish culture. So, and we are going to adjust for the Polish culture so we can reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ. But yeah, they're there, and the Mormons are there too. We know their presence, and we see them about, and when we see them going around, we know who they are. And we will be the third. Right now there are two. There's one in Warsaw and there's one in Gdańsk. We will be, for the whole country, we will be the third.
For a while we were the only ones there.
Yeah, for a while we were there, the Shiroks hadn't come yet. So they weren't a missionary yet. And the McLeans were itinerating. So if we weren't where we were, there would have been zero Assemblies of God missionaries in Poland at that time. And right now we will be the third when we arrive.
Do you see any residual
war? Oh, everywhere. They just dug up a bomb while they were doing. They found an unexploded bomb under a parking lot. We've seen shot up buildings. All the newer buildings in our city are like foot and a half thick concrete. Essentially, the buildings are bomb proof. The newer ones, because
Soviet-style ones.
Yeah, there's lots of Soviet-style architecture, and if you know what Soviet-style architecture is, it's just a gray cube with some windows, because they intentionally made their buildings ugly. So when you say Soviet-style architecture, it's kind of a joke to mean that it's four cement walls that are still gray, never painted, with numbers on the outside telling you which block of apartments this is. And so there's quite a bit of that. Some of the old town has since been redone in a nicer style. But a lot of Poland is actually more modern because it was destroyed during the war. Yeah, in Warsaw, there's a part of the town called the Old Town, which was completely destroyed in the war, and there's a part of the town called the New Town that was pretty much untouched. So now the Old Town is newer than the New Town because they rebuilt the Old Town.
To look like
so, it's just funny. The Old Town's only 40 or 50 years old, where the New Town's still a couple hundred years old. It's just, you see that everywhere. You see, you should say what you say usually about the war, about our troops and things.
Okay. Try not to get emotional.
Yeah.
Okay. When we were over there and they dug up that unexploded bomb from World War II, I thought, oh, this is a battlefield that we're living on. And I thought about how both of my grandfathers fought in World War II. They were both in Europe. And the war ended and they went home and America was celebrating and they had this big baby boom and everything was great. And these people that where we live, the war ended and they were in this devastated war zone, and then the Soviets came. And I can't imagine before. I mean, I see how it is now because they've changed a lot. They're trying to become more modern, but you can see through people's mannerisms and stuff, and just talking to people, you see how devastating that can be and what it can do to people. And like our daughter's friend's grandpa was in Auschwitz. And, sorry.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's an everyday thing, just living with the fact. And as Pam pointed out, yeah, this was ground zero of the war. This is where it started. And the devastation was total. And it wasn't just, the Germans doing it. First, the Germans came and bulldozed them. Well, the Soviets weren't any better. In fact, a lot of the people say that to the population that wasn't sent to concentration camps, the Soviets were worse. The Soviets mistreated the general population even worse than the Nazis did. And so they went from bad to at least as bad. I mean, go study what Stalin did to the Ukrainians and you won't put the two of them against each other as far as horribleness. In fact, in their culture, every single comedian does a bit about Adolf Hitler. They laugh about him and mock him. I had a board game called Apples to Apples. Anyone familiar with Apples to Apples? Okay, in that game, there's a card that says Adolf Hitler, and I took him out because I'm in Poland, and I thought I need to be sensitive towards the Polish people and everything that happened, so I took Hitler out of my box. Well, I'd loaned my game to a Polish teacher, and he put Adolf Hitler back in, and I didn't know it. Well, I played a game with people, and one of the Polish students played Adolf Hitler, and the way the game works is there's an adjective. This is why we use it in English class. There's an adjective, and everyone has nouns in their hand. And what you do is you're playing a noun to go with the adjective to make a funny combination or something like that. Well, they played Adolf Hitler with patriotic. And then there's someone who's the judge who picks the winner card out of all of that. And he picked Hitler. And they laughed, and they laughed, and they laughed, and they laughed till tears were rolling down their cheeks. They find him hilarious. They don't find Stalin funny. They find him terrifying. They're not afraid of the Germans anymore. They're still scared of the Russians. And what happened to them during those 44 years of Soviet occupation, it was crushing the human spirit, crushing the life out of an entire people group, to the point where still today they don't talk to strangers. You don't talk to someone on the street. You don't talk to someone in the store. Pam's always says, you don't smile at people because there's a suspicion still in the larger people group, simply because they were so devastated, so crushed under this boot for 44 years. And so, the war is still very front and center in a lot of people's minds. While we were there, we did take the tour of Auschwitz, which is, if you ever get over there, it's worth doing, but it's horrible. It's one of those things that it's important, but it's horrible. When you see not just what happened to the Jewish people, but what happened to the Polish people, what happened to the Swedish people, what happened to all foreigners, what happened to everyone who wasn't their ideal, and just the devastation, the human devastation that took. And then you find out that for the next 44 years, they continued to be oppressed and crushed by the Soviets. It's just astonishing that the people are as alive as they are. And so, yeah, it's a daily thing that has to be pushed through. That's part of why the teaching is so important as a way to open up a door, because we're talking about a people group that is suspicious. They're naturally suspicious.
So they
They were behind the Iron Curtain. This was added on to Poland at the end of the war, as pretty much as a land grab by the Soviets, and of course then the Iron Curtain came down. Poland had a unique situation because it wasn't absorbed into the Soviet Union, but it was a puppet state. While they had their own government, they didn't really have their own government. The Soviets were ruling. It'd be like if here in Wisconsin we had a governor, but the governor didn't really have any power. There was a shadow governor who had all the power and could tell them what to do. Poland had a government, but they didn't really have any authority to do anything, because if they ever expressed any independence like they did in the early 80s, the tanks rolled in. And in the early 80s, their martial law was declared and the Soviet army came in because the Poles expressed too much self-determination, and so they marched in on them and crushed them for several years, and they still talk about that. I had students who remembered vividly martial law and everything that had happened, and standing in line at the store waiting to see if they would have something. You don't know if you could get to the store and they would have nothing for sale. Or you could find out that something's being delivered today, and you go stand in line hoping it's flour, hoping it's sugar, hoping it's something useful, and they have chairs. But you took the chairs because it was something. Now I have something in my hands. And so It's a very different sort of society to live in. Basically, they were on the losing side of World War II twice. Because first, they lost to the Nazis, and then that's not victory, going from Nazi rule to Soviet rule. You're being handed from one dictator to another. Luck Luenza? Sounds like it.
Polish labor union leader, the Pope recognized him and really helped Poland get free. He was arrested, he was in prison for a while. Very strongly affiliated with
the revolution. Kind of the breakdown of the Soviet, the wall came down.
Yeah, I know they really look to the Pope still for that. They may not emphasize him because he steals some of the thunder from John Paul, who they absolutely worship. Oddly enough, the American who they absolutely worship is Woodrow Wilson. But that's in 1918, Poland didn't exist as a culture, and at the end of World War I, he demanded, at the founding of the League of Nations, one of his points of light was the establishment of a homeland for the Polish people. So Poland got their country in 1918 because of Woodrow Wilson. So every city has a Woodrow Wilson street, and they have parades about him, and they really like Woodrow Wilson. That's part of why they really like Americans. Anyone else? There are none in Poland. Yeah, Poland, well, what happened was Poland, before the Syrian Civil War, Poland took a large group of Syrian Christians who were being persecuted. So one of the first things the Polish government would say, well, look, we took a bunch of Syrians. They took a bunch of Syrian Christians who were being persecuted. Then, after the Russians invaded Crimea and started all the trouble in eastern Ukraine, Poland took in 1 million Ukrainians. There's 1 million Ukrainian refugees in Poland right now. So that was another one of Poland's things, was like, look, we've taken in 1 million Ukrainian refugees. We can't take any more refugees. So the EU has sort of backed off of them because they have this 1 million Ukrainian refugee problem because of the Russians. And see, the EU is leaning on the countries that are resisting. They've been leaning on Poland, they've been leaning on Hungary to take in more Syrians, more North Africans. Poland has been able to say we have 1 million Ukrainians. It's not going so well for Hungary right now. We don't know what's going to happen to Erdogan there with his... He's sort of allied himself with the Polish government as standing up against the EU. But now that the EU is taking the pressure off of Poland, politics is really, really sketchy. But what's happening is Poland, to make a long story short, Poland hasn't taken a lot of the Muslim refugees, and the Muslim refugees in Germany are living a better life than they would if they came to Poland and had to try to live off of the social services in Poland, which are not a lot to deal with. So they're not an attractive destination, and they haven't really taken any.
Have you seen any miracles? While you've been in ministry over there, have you seen the hand of God doing something?
Yeah, in our church, they do a healing ministry out on the streets. They set up chairs and they set up banners, and the banners are in Polish, and I'm not quite sure what they say. I think they might say healing. And people come and they have them sit in the chairs and they pray for them, and they've seen people healed, they've seen people delivered, they've seen people just, we've seen the hand of God in people's lives powerfully. We've seen people baptized in the Holy Spirit. We've seen God move in powerful ways in the church there and through the leadership there. And I'm glad to have been able to be a part of some of that. It's exciting to be able to pray for people.
I think there were a lot of miracles that happened in our lives to get us there. One thing I was thinking about today was, I'm not going to go through everything, but I was having a lot of anxiety when we were going to get on the plane. I don't like to fly. And I was like, okay, I'm getting on the plane anyway. I know we're going to Poland. I know we'll get there. It'll be fine. I just couldn't picture Poland actually being there. And we got to the airport, and this little Russian lady came up to me and said, "Are you a Christian?" And I said, "Yes. How did you know?" And she said, "Well, you were smiling, and I just thought you were a Christian." And she said, "I have some medical problems, and I'm going back to Siberia. Will you pray for me?" And so I just prayed for her right there in the airport. They actually were starting to set up all the stuff, and they asked us to move. And so we moved over and kept praying. But it was like God was saying, okay, she's mine and she's mine. And you know what? They both need each other right now. And that was just a confirmation that it doesn't matter where I go in the world. God can see me and he can use me and he can send people who for whatever reason. But that was a blessing to me and it was a blessing to that lady. And after that, I was like, why would I be afraid to get on the plane? God just showed me, I can do anything. Just calm down. So, and that was just amazing. I just thought that was a miracle because I didn't need that to happen. I would have gotten on the plane anyway, but it was just a way of God showing his love and showing that he could use me with anybody. So.
Yeah, we'll still be working with the Polish Assemblies of God. The village we're going to is called Pruszków. That's where we want to plant the first of these Silesian churches. It's about 15 miles south of the city of Opola. We actually have a map out there. We have a map of Poland. It's a road map of Poland that we found at Barnes & Noble, oddly enough. But the village that we'll be going to is about 15 miles south of Opola, outside of the church that we were working with when we came, where Pastor Mariusz, who was the head of missions and church planting, is still the pastor. So they will be our parent church. They'll be the ones we'll be working with. Now, they won't be sending personnel, at least at first, because we can't have Poles. If we have Polish people, the Silesian people might not come. Interestingly, I'm going to try and get my friend Alex to come. He's Ukrainian, so they might not be, and he's a Pentecostal pastor as well, and he speaks Polish better than I do. So, yeah, but she's Polish. The point is, we'll be partnering with them, and so we'll be working with an already established Assemblies of God church sort of to get support and to get that sort of camaraderie with that church. So it's we're not going out into the wilderness on our own and trying to do this completely pioneer style. We'll be reaching a people group that right now is considered 100% unreached, but we'll be having that connection to the Polish Assemblies of God. But I just want to tell a quick miracle story. I'll tell my miracle story. When we got there, we have stories about our residency permit that we could tell all night long because, man, that was an ordeal. But one of the many visits we had to the immigration office, they said, well, we see your financial things, we see the support you've got coming from America, but that's not good enough. You could just spend all the money and then go on Polish social services. They're saying this to an American, and go on Polish social services. So you need to have a job. I'm like, oh, well, I have my teaching certificate, so that's a good thing. So on Thursday, they told me I needed a job. Earlier that same week, Pam had met a Baptist missionary in a language library that they opened immediately behind our apartment, like 2 weeks after we arrived. So they opened a foreign language library right behind our apartment, and Pam met a Baptist missionary who was volunteering there. And he was from Michigan, just, 100 miles from where you grew up. Amazing. Just wait. It gets better. So we met with him for coffee on Friday. They told me I needed a job on Thursday. I told Mitch, I need a job. They told me I need a job. Mitch said, well, my visa doesn't let me work, but there's a language school whose director is always asking me if I can teach classes and my visa doesn't let me teach. I'll see if she needs anybody. Friday afternoon, he called and he said, hey, yesterday on Thursday, the day they told me I needed a job, her Canadian teacher just walked off the job and quit. So she has an opening for a native speaker of English to come and teach. And she needs someone like immediately. Can I give her your number? And I'm like, well, yes. And so Basha called me. She's the director of the school. And we had a phone interview. She wanted me to come in on Monday. I went in on Monday. I had a face-to-face interview. She hired me to teach. So I had a job. And the school was in the building next door to ours. Now, how does that happen by coincidence that I'm told on Thursday I need a job, her teacher quits on Thursday, on Monday I've got the job and it's in a language school that's next door to where I live? And that you met Mitch the week before. It's just, you know, this is one of those things that couldn't have happened coincidentally. God arranged all of these things to just happen. And it was one thing after another, after another, after another, after another. God just opening doors and leading us by the hand through and just amazing things that we saw God doing in our lives and in the lives of our friends and the lives of people around us and in the Polish people and in the Silesian people I got to interact with and seeing the open doors that God has prepared for us. We're excited. We can't wait to get back. We know that the Polish Assemblies of God wants us back. I got to know they call him bishop because they don't have the word presbyter. So the bishop over the Polish Assemblies of God, his name's Marek Kamiński, good friend of ours. He said, what can I do to get you back here? And I said, well, you can write a letter to Greg Mundus and tell him that you want me back here. And he did. So it's very cool that God is just arranging everything. And, you know, sometimes when we were in Poland during those 2 years, we couldn't see everything that was going on. Who wrote the book, Just Enough Light for the Step I'm On? I always forget the author. Stormy O'Meriton wrote a book called Just Enough Light for the Step I'm On, which is so true. God, oftentimes we see the destination, and we want God to light up the whole path and show us the whole way. And God shows us the next step and says, just take that step. And so we take that step and say, well, I still can't see. Well, you can see the next one and the next one. And the next one. And sometimes while we were in Poland, we couldn't see how everything was going to work together. When our residency permit, we had, like Pam was saying, we had, I think, 9 or 10 days left on our passport before we were going to have to leave the country. We were planning on running to Ukraine for a few weeks because that would extend the clock because Ukraine isn't part of the EU. And so it's like, okay, we'll go over into Ukraine. That'll buy us a few more days. And then with just a week or so left, they gave us a stamp that says you can stay in Poland until we're done processing your paperwork. And I talked to a lawyer who said he knew a man who stayed in Poland for 3 years on that stamp because they lost his paperwork. So when they say as long as it takes, they mean it. But God just kept providing one thing after another after another. But something I used to say when I was preaching back when I pastored the church in Morgan, I used to say to my people, God often gives us just enough, just in time. He doesn't give us everything that we need for the rest of our lives all at once. He gives us enough for now so that we continue relying upon him. But we were never in want. We never went hungry. We never went cold. God provided everything we needed. And so often we were at the last few coins in our hand and something would happen and all of a sudden we had what we needed. And it was just, wow, God, this is awesome. So, Our kids were there with us those 2 years. When we went, they were 12 and 14. And so they turned 14 and 16 while we were there. We continued homeschooling them. Poland has a special law in the books that Americans can homeschool their kids. Otherwise, homeschooling it's not impossible. It's very, very difficult. But they made it easy for Americans because they want Americans there, which is cool. And so we homeschooled our kids through Alpha and Omega. We used Monarch through Alpha and Omega. It's an online course. It's just that at their ages, 12 and 14, taking them over there and trying to throw them into the school, when your kids are really little, they'll pick up the language like that. As teenagers, it slows down a little, and it's a little more of a chore. And we were concerned about the transition, especially for our younger child who had a harder time transitioning to going over there in the first place. They did make friends in the church. They made friends in the community. But we really needed to keep them. One of the things that I've looked at the whole time, I am a missionary. I am a pastor, but I'm a husband and a father before I'm a pastor. God called me to my family. Nowhere in the Bible does it say to just let your family go to hell. It says leave them for God. My relationship with Jesus is first. My relationship with Pam is second. My relationship with the children is third. I care about the spiritual health of my two daughters. I care about the spiritual health of my girls. I don't want to lose them. And so that's the reason why they're not with us tonight, is so they can be at their own church, so they can be with their youth group where they're plugged in and they have a community where, you know, I love bringing them to church with us. I mean, Samantha, our older daughter, she's almost fluent in Polish. Polish wasn't hard enough. She decided to start learning Korean and now Mandarin, because it's just, these languages, I don't know what she's going to learn next, Martian, but she... Well, she sees it as a challenge. What can I learn? It's like, well, I don't know what else the world has to offer you. But I want their spiritual health to continue to grow. And I'm impressed and I'm proud of both of them. And so that is always in my heart, is that balance between we need to keep serving the Lord, but we also need to present Jesus to my family. I need to live Christ for my girls. I need to be a witness to them first. If I can't be a witness to them, then what am I doing? And so when we go back, our oldest daughter probably won't come with us because we'll be going next summer. She'll be 18. She's planning on attending North Central next fall. So she'll probably stay in the U.S., which if you really want to pray for something, pray for that transition next year where we leave our daughter behind. That's going to be a trial, probably more so for us than it is for her, because she's going to be going to college and excited, and we're going to be going to Poland without her, which, if you can't tell, it's weighing on my mind already. Well, yeah, her Polish is amazing. I can't believe she speaks Polish so well. Sometimes, yes, definitely. She's very, very good.
She can talk to Polish people, and they don't know that she's not Polish. She can give directions and order bread and
everything,
and just have conversations with people.
That's the highest compliment you can be given, too, is, oh, I thought you were Polish. I only ever got that once. And that's because I said, poproszę stolik dla cztery osoby, which it's just a phrase that I'd practice. It means, please, may we have a table for four people. It was at a restaurant. So he gave us Polish menus and was talking to us in Polish because he thought we were Polish. But.
Yeah. Sometimes people ask if Polish people look different, and I don't, not really. So we can blend in really easily, but then it's a little awkward when you open your mouth and you can't speak the same as everyone else. But yeah, we blend in. We went to the Wrocław Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't.
The only time we were in Warsaw was getting off and on the plane. So we landed there and then went to Opola. It's about a 3.5-hour train ride away. But I did read that book. It was interesting.
When you ask Polish people where you should visit, no one will say Warsaw. They say go to Krakow, they say go to Wrocław, they say go to Gdańsk. No one will say Warsaw. It's a national capital, so of course traffic's kind of crazy, but they're not big fans of Warsaw, probably because of all the politics and everything. But it is a historical city. There's a lot of when we went there and we spent the night, we walked past a building that still had all the bullet holes and things from the war still standing. And so we walked past that on our way to this very modern apartment building, because you want a cheap place, rent somebody's apartment for the night. It's really cool. They rent apartments, not a hotel room, but somebody's apartment. It was cheaper than a hotel. Well, yeah, and the hotels were hundreds of dollars. This place was like $40. It's like a whole apartment. Well, what are we doing? Why don't look at hotels. Get yourself an apartment. It was cool. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Your church, you have a separate building to go to your church?
In Opola? Or when we were in Opola, yeah, the Pentecostal church had a building. It was called Ostoja Church. When we When we go back and we start our own church, we'll probably start by meeting out of our home. We'll start as a house church. We hope to eventually acquire a building. We have a building targeted. There's an old church. It used to be the Lutheran church. Apparently, like 8 or 9 people still meet there once a month. But that's it. That's all the German Lutherans left in Poland, 8 or 9 of them. And they meet once a month. And so that building, the Assemblies of God attempted to buy it. But they aborted that process when the church they were planting never took off. So we would hope to, partnered with the Polish Assemblies of God, eventually acquire that building when we plant the church in Pruszków. The village of Pruszków is not huge. It's about 2,500 people. But the way villages in Poland work is there's a village every mile and a half, 2 miles. There's 64,000 villages in the country of Poland. It's the size of New Mexico, and they have 64,000 villages and 700 cities. There is a municipality everywhere. That's why you don't drive anywhere, because they don't have freeways like we do, and every mile you're slowing down and going through a little town, and if you go a mile, then you're slowing down and going. It takes forever to drive. But as far as Pruszków is concerned, it's the capital of its little county called the gmina. It's a little smaller than one of our counties, but it's the capital. It's about 20,000 people in the county, and it's the county seat. So lots of regional traffic comes through Pruszków. So we see that as a very strategic place to start. This village was targeted working with the Polish Assemblies of God, with their director of missions and church planting. We talked with him, you know, where would be the best place to start? And he said, Pruszków is ideal. It's not far from Opola, so you can still be partnering with us. It's the seat of its gmina. It's far enough outside of the city where no one's going to be driving into the city from there. No one's trying to drive 15 miles on a Sunday morning. It'd take forever. It'd be like an hour. 15 miles, take you an hour to drive that far. It's just the roads are really bad. So we've targeted that village for that purpose, and we expect to start in our house and eventually acquire a building and then turn it over to the Silesian people and then move to another village and start the entire process over again, teaching, meeting in a house, building a body of believers, handing it over, and then move again until we reach 800,000 people. Okay, I'm an idealist. Anyone else? Or? Yeah, it's a lot like it's a lot like Wisconsin, just more villages. Yeah, every 2 miles you're running into a village. So the farm fields are smaller, but the climate is very similar. So they grow a lot of the same things. There's corn. There's a lot of the same things. They do grow a lot of root vegetables. So beets, potatoes, those sorts of things are grown in abundance. But there's not a lot of animal farms. They do raise pigs, but they don't raise a lot of beef. Beef is very expensive. The only meat more expensive than beef is turkey. Believe it or not, turkey is the most expensive meat we found. Lobster is cheaper than turkey because they don't raise any turkeys, as far as I can tell, anywhere in Europe. They import them all from the United States. They just don't raise turkey, and I couldn't tell you why. The things I've read, some people don't like the taste. They say it's too dry. They're too big for little tiny European ovens, all sorts of different reasons. But we had Thanksgiving at our apartment for 23 Polish and Ukrainian people who came to our little apartment, and we had to buy 2 turkeys, and that was a very painful purchase because, man, they're expensive. But they loved having Thanksgiving. The pastor said, Pastor Mariusz said, we need to do this every month. And I said, I can't afford to do this every month. I'm a missionary. What do you think I'm made out of? We were told that too, and the Poles love peanut butter. They have, it's more expensive than here. In fact, Nutella is cheaper than peanut butter, but they have lots of peanut butter. What they don't have is they don't eat spicy food. So anything spicy, there's no Mexican food, there isn't really Thai food, there's none of that. Yeah, they have kebab stands all over the place from the Middle East, but a lot of they don't have a lot of spicy food, so that's really missing. One thing they have in extreme abundance is ketchup. I told my brother they have more ketchup than we do here, and he didn't believe me, so he looked it up. Polish people eat more ketchup than anyone else in the world, and that's not per capita, that's total. So the 38 million Polish people eat more ketchup than the 350, 360 million Americans, and they produce more ketchup than anyone else in the world, and I suppose if they're eating it all, it makes sense. And I actually will accept and believe that because we were at Tesco, and their grocery stores are smaller than a lot smaller than ours, but they had more different kinds of ketchup than we do at a Walmart or an Auchan. Now, Auchan's Polish. What's the one? Woodman's. They have more different kinds of ketchup there than here. My brother looked it up on Amazon, and available in Poland are 83 different varieties of ketchup. Not different brands, different varieties. And it's just, so they are a ketchup-eating people. But they have a lot of American things. They have McDonald's, they have KFC, they have restaurants like that. Okay, Pam, hey, go get a drink. Go get a drink. So get me talking about food, I'll talk all night. But that one of the interesting things was they had just opened a KFC, and I was talking about this at lunch or at dinner, and the line at the KFC was down the hall and down the stairs, and it was just this huge line. And it's because they don't have fried chicken anywhere else. This is the only place you can get fried chicken. Did you get it?
No.
No. Well, you scared him, but he's still there. You're right in the back of the head. Now I think that's just for clapping so loud. Got him. But where was I? Oh, there was a KFC. But my favorite American thing, and I put the air quotes around that, was Papa Jack's American Restaurant. On the corner, it was called, that was the name of it. And they had a big Uncle Sam standing outside. And it was, we had to go there. I mean, we had to go to Papa Jack's American restaurant and see what this was. And it was like hamburgers and hot dogs. And they weren't great. And they were playing Canadian music, which I found odd. The bands were Canadian. And you know, you would say, okay, well, Canada's in North America. Yeah, but they have Uncle Sam out there. Uncle Sam's not Canadian. And so Papa Jack's American Restaurant still tickles my funny bone every time I think of it.
They have like meat markets here.
Oh, they have, yeah, there's a lot more smaller things. The neighborhood butcher shop, the neighborhood bakery. Yeah. You see, Polish sausage is sort of a misnomer because they have a billion different kinds of sausage. There isn't just one, there's hundreds. They eat a lot of pork. Pork is the cheapest. Man, they have a lot of pig. And they have a lot of sausage. And just an unbelievable amount of sausage. And I'll tell you this, they have really, really good bread. I can't get used to American bread again because bread over there, now it turns to stone after 12 hours of being exposed to air because they don't use any preservatives. So if you buy them today and you think they're going to be good tomorrow, you're wrong because they turn to stone and you could probably hurt someone really badly with one of those rolls after a good 12 hours exposure to air. I used one as a hammer one time. No, not quite, but it's close. They really solidify. So the people do. They buy their bread every single day. They buy their meat every single day. The refrigerators are small, but they're almost always empty because they'll buy stuff each day. You don't refrigerate eggs. You ready for something that'll blow your mind? You don't refrigerate eggs because they don't wash them. They still got feathers and things on them. But they stay good for weeks. It's just, my brain just couldn't handle it at first. It's like, we're going to leave the eggs out? Aren't they going to start to smell? But they don't. It's just, I can't. It's just different. And they don't pasteurize their milk either. And that took a little bit of bravery. We sanitize our food a lot over here more than they do over there.
Here in the United States, they're going overseas. They've been bringing boxes of milk.
Mm-hmm.
And you can leave that out for months, and it's good.
Yeah, they sell the cartons of milk. The cartons of milk are non-refrigerated. The bottles are refrigerated, and the bottles are all non-pasteurized. And I don't know what they do with the cartons, but we always got the bottles, and just because we did. Yes, sir.
Do they drink a lot of their beverages at room temperature or refrigerated?
Room temperature. In fact, we kept our water in the refrigerator because we liked it nice and cold, and they wouldn't drink it. Because they think that drinking cold liquids is going to make you sick. And so they don't, they won't, they want all their liquids to either room temperature or hot. They drink a lot of hot, a lot of coffee, a lot of tea. They drink a lot of hot liquid. They drink soup as a drink, especially the borscht, well, barszcz in Polish. In the Russian borscht is beet soup and it's served cold and it's got sour cream. The Polish barszcz is beet soup and it's served hot and it's almost clear, but it's purple and it's got a lot of pepper in it. It's really spicy. It's actually pretty good. But I couldn't get used to drinking it out of a coffee mug. You can get it out of coffee machines. You know, you go to the coffee machine, you put in your thing, and you could get hot chocolate, or you can get coffee, or you can get soup in a coffee, and they just drink it. I did it, and it tasted good, but my brain kept telling me, you're doing this wrong. You're not supposed to drink this. You need a spoon. It was weird. My brain was just telling me, you can't do this. It's good, though. You can't do this. Those weird things you got to get over. Yeah. Yeah, that's not uncommon. The culture of alcohol is different than it is here. There's among the general population, there's actually less drunkenness over there. There's more alcohol consumption, but less drunkenness, if that makes sense. They could do the one beer with dinner or the glass of wine with dinner and not need 12 or anything like that. So it's a different culture. Than in America, but the people who have a problem with alcohol, they all end up homeless. There's a huge homeless population because of it, and it's an issue, it's a real issue. But yeah, that's true. Younger people. I think it's 16 in Poland. I don't think it's 14. I'm not surprised. There's probably no age in France. Well, in France, there's probably no age. In Germany, I think it's even younger than in Poland. In Poland, it's 16.
One country was that people that were smoking cigarettes were all going to hell, but they were okay to drink their wine. And they went to the next country.
It's the other way around.
The other way around.
Yeah.
The reason I asked that question is we had a niece over in Azerbaijan.
Ah.
Missionaries. And they were telling us that the people there, they don't cool their drinks.
Yeah.
Room temperature.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that is the opinion. They think that it'll make you sick. And that in Poland, a lot of that same attitude. There's only a couple of places that would ever give you ice, and they were both American. I think Pizza Hut gave you ice, and I think the KFC gave ice, but only if you asked for it, only if you wanted it. Everywhere else, yeah, it's usually room temperature, or you know, it's not chilled. Sometimes it's not exactly room temperature. They kept it in like a cooler part of the room, so it's a couple degrees lower than room temperature. But yeah, they don't drink cold. There's no ice cold soda because that'll make you sick. And they really believe that. We had cold water, and our closest friends wouldn't drink the water that we kept in our refrigerator. They it's too cold. It'll make us sick. It's like, well, we drink it and we're not sick, but Americans have special constitutions. We can handle cold water, I guess. But that was one nice thing about the Polish people is you can tell them exactly how you feel all the time, and they're not offended by it at all. I had one of my good friend, his name's Andre. We were in the car 6 hours a week because it was an hour and a half to the village. We taught in an hour and a half back, and we went twice a week. So we were in this car for 6 hours a week, and we just had a shouting match about something. We were debating something. We're yelling at each other, and we got to the school, and he's got his arm around me, and we're best friends because that's not a problem. That's just being Polish, and. I'll tell them about the how are you thing. I was at school. I was in the teacher's room, and people would always ask me, "How are you doing?" I'm great. I'm good. Because I'm an American. That's what we do. I'm awesome. You know, I caught my leg on fire last night, but I'm awesome. So I was having a really bad day, and Michał came in, and that Michał is Michael, and he came in, and he said, "Oh, Randall." I went by Randall there because they all speak British English, and Randy means something else in British English, so I went by Randall. He said, "How are you today?" And I don't know what it was. I'd been having a bad day. I just let it all out. "This is how I'm doing." And he said, "Oh, you're finally Polish." Because I'd let it all out there. I was no longer being the, "I'm great, I'm good." He just, "Oh, you're finally Polish. You're finally just being yourself, being honest, expressing exactly how you feel." And that's how they are. They could come up to you and say, "Your shirt's ugly." That's not meant to be an insult. They're telling you, "You need to change." I mean, that's really how they are. They're not meaning it. They don't mean it to be rude. They're just very, 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 very straightforward. There's no casual politeness. There's none of that. And so, you know, transitioning to America would be very difficult for a lot of them. Any other questions? I don't know. What time do you usually end? Okay. I didn't want to. Midnight? I got a 3-hour drive to go, so. Who's got a couch we can crash on? Oh, well then we better close in prayer. Now, did anyone else have any other questions? Otherwise, I'll give you the service back. Next summer, we'll be here about another year. Okay, we started raising funds. We were at 0%, and so a lot of people are doing it faster because people who were MAs through AGWM, they're starting at 40 or 50% of their budget, and we started at 0%. So we actually started with a larger amount to cover than a lot of the current missionaries. 80% of the missionaries who are at training were already between 40 and 50% because they had been MAs in the past. And we didn't go as MAs. We went at the invitation of the Polish Assemblies of God, and we worked directly with them on a very, very, very tight budget. We were only living off of $500 or $600 a month, which, that's not a lot of money in Poland. Even in Poland, that's not a lot. It's enough to survive, and not much else. Yes, sir. Well, they don't use the doll. They don't use the euro or the dollar. They use the zloty. And when we were there, $1 was about 4 zloty. And on top of that, their prices tended to be a little lower than ours. It's about 40% cheaper to live in Poland. But that's a direct translation. So even though the dollar gets almost 4 times the buying power, you're only saving about 40%. So $1,000 here is like $1,400 there. So it's the equivalent of living off of that. So it's about a 40% difference, which is significant, but the average income's $5,000, which, you know, that's the equivalent of living off of 40% of 5,000. Oh, why is my brain not working? Oh, that's 7,000. That's the equivalent of living off of $7,000 a year in America. So that's it. It's not a lot. So it was tight, but God provided. We never went hungry. We got close. My joke is there were days where I said, "Well, we'll get home and we'll have onion skins and Nutella." For whatever reason, we always had Nutella in our house. I guess we just liked it. But Pastor, I guess I'll give it back to you. If you wanted to talk about anything else or contact us, on our prayer cards is all our contact information, our email and our Facebook page and our website. So that's the best ways to get a hold of us are through the computer. And the best way to keep track of what we're doing is through our Facebook. Pam's constantly updating and taking care of that.